Welcome to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz. What if you could actually grow your brain at any age? Today, we're joined by world-renowned neurologist Majid Fatui, adjunct professor at Johns Hopkins and author of The Invincible Brain. Backed by more than 35 years of research, Dr. Fatui says cognitive decline isn't inevitable, and in just 12 weeks, you can improve memory, focus, and even increase the size of your hippocampus.
From the five pillars of brain health and the brain foods you're probably missing to why most brain games fail and how calm, purpose, and even boredom at times can make you mentally younger, this conversation may just change how you think about aging forever. Dr. Fatui, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm honored.
Well, you make a really big claim that is backed by over three decades of research that you have conducted. You've published a lot in really prestigious journals, and you say that 40% of the cases of, and I'm going to ask you in a moment to differentiate between dementia and Alzheimer's, are preventable. That's a big number. And we all know that we should keep our brains active, but it's multifaceted for you. What creates the soup to begin with?
The study you just talked about, it was published in Lancet. It was actually by a group of international scientists who looked at all the causes for brain shrinkage and dementia. And just to clarify, dementia is an umbrella term, which means that somebody has experienced cognitive decline so severe they cannot function anymore. Alzheimer's disease is a subtype of dementia. Other forms of dementia include Lewy body dementia, frontotemporal dementia, and so on. Now, Alzheimer's dementia is not a pure disease. It has many components, and that's why it could be prevented, because the preventable parts of it have to do with lifestyle factors. And the Lancet study, which is one of the most cited articles in neurology, found that at least 45% of dementia cases in the world can be prevented by addressing 14 mostly lifestyle and health-related conditions. These include obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, sleeping problems, hearing loss, vision loss, air pollution. So the bottom line is that late-life Alzheimer's disease, it's not a pure disease like pancreatic cancer or lung cancer. It's more of a syndrome that has many components. Unfortunately, most of the factors that contribute to cognitive decline are treatable and preventable.
Something that I was curious about was sleep apnea. That's one of the things, you know, sleep issues and sleep apnea in general may be a contributor or is a contributor. And you talk also about how the importance of deep sleep. We know from both Mary Beth and I have Aura rings now. So every morning we know what if we've gotten light, REM, or deep sleep. Why is deep sleep so important for your brain?
So there are two issues you mentioned. One is sleep apnea and one is deep sleep. Sleep apnea is a silent killer of brain cells. When people have moderate to severe sleep apnea, they don't get enough oxygen during sleep. And they stop breathing periodically, sometimes 30 or 40 or 60 times per hour. And those frequent episodes of apnea literally shrink the brain by up to 18% if the sleep apnea is not treated. If it's treated, then the person is almost the same as someone who has not had sleep apnea. The second issue you mentioned is deep sleep. During deep sleep, our brain goes through a natural rinsing and cleaning process. It's very fascinating how our brain has like a waste management system. And that, for some reason, is most active during deep sleep. That's also when memories are consolidated. This is also when the footprints of Alzheimer's disease, these molecules called amyloid and tau, are being cleared out of the brain. One study showed that even one night of poor sleep, one night of no sleeping at all in that study, they just kept everybody up all night, is associated with increased amyloid in the brain, even one single night. Now, to be fair, it's one night of no sleep at all. It's not the same thing as sleeping 4 hours or 6 hours. It turns out sleep is a very important component of brain health, and people who have insomnia, which means sleeping fewer than 6 hours per night for decades, have a brain area for memory called hippocampus, which could be as almost half the size of someone who has not had insomnia. So sleep is one of the most important pillars of brain health.
A few years ago, I was having a lot of trouble sleeping, and my GP, I had got some Ambien. And after I was using it a little bit regularly for a while, she took me off of it because she said that the studies had shown that there was an increased risk of dementia and things like that later in life by people who had used certain sleep aids. And it made me wonder, which I did, and it was a pain, but I'm really glad that she put her foot down about it. I wonder sometimes if having trouble sleeping, like, is it a chicken or the egg issue? Do people who are prone to the kind of amyloid or tau buildup in their brains, is it possible that they have trouble sleeping in the first place and that's what leads them to look for sleep aids? Or do you find that the studies show that certain things that we take to help our sleep can actually be problematic?
That's an excellent question. It is not the case that people who have early stages of Alzheimer's disease develop insomnia, because insomnia is so common, and there are at least 20 common culprits for it. To think that Alzheimer's is the culprit for insomnia is really, really, really out there as a very unlikely possibility. The most common causes of insomnia are anxiety, stress about life circumstances. For example, a mother with a child with autism, or a parent with dementia, financial issues, stressful marital conflicts. They're the most common reasons why people either have difficulty falling asleep or waking up in the middle of the night. Now, sometimes pain issues can prevent someone's sleep. Many medications can have side effects of insomnia, caffeine, eating too much, spicy food. There are so many common factors that affect sleep. Most of them, when treated, make a person sleep better. The mistake a lot of people make is to think that insomnia is common. Everybody has it, so I have it too, so it's normal. It's like saying everybody is stressed out, so I am stressed out, so I'm just like everybody else. No, you need to make sleep a priority, find what's causing your insomnia, and address it like you mean it. Don't just say, oh, insomnia runs in my family, or I have these issues, I can't help it. No, you need to do what your doctor did. Put your foot down, say, listen, I'm gonna take care of my sleep, and go through, in my book, I have a list of factors. Of course, you can also just Google it or ask Chad. There's so many common factors, and you really owe it to yourself to improve your sleep.
So sleep, making our sleep a priority, is a critical part of our brain health. Can you outline some of the other things you talk about in your book that are really important?
Compelling scientific evidence has shown that five factors, which are called pillars of brain health, are associated with an increase in size of the memory areas of the brain called hippocampus and cortex. In other words, I'm not just saying these things. There are thousands, not dozens, not hundreds, thousands of studies published in the past 30 years or so that have shown five factors being particularly important for brain health. There are 20 other factors too, but the five most important factors are exercise, improving your fitness, which increases blood flow, reduces inflammation, increases the number of mitochondria, which are generally producing cells, organelles inside cells, sleep, making sure we sleep 7 to 8 hours a night, eating a Mediterranean diet or eating a healthy diet, avoiding junk food, reducing stress as much as possible, doing meditation or slow breathing exercises, and then doing brain training exercises, things that challenge your brain. You see the best results if you combine these factors together, which I have done in my clinic. You know, we did a study of providing our patients with a program which addresses what factors shrink their brain and helping them work on improving the five pillars of brain health at the same time. So for example, let's say, you know, somebody comes to see me, they're 68 years old, they're forgetful, they're worried about Alzheimer's disease, their mother or uncle has Alzheimer's disease, they're worried about it. And so what I would do I would make a list of all the things that could be affecting their brain functions. These could be from head to toe, depression, hearing loss, vision loss. They could have dental problems. They can have gum disease. They can have pain. They can have hormone issues, B12 deficiency, heart problems, lung problems, kidney problems, liver problems. All of those things have been shown to affect the brain and literally shrink the brain at a microscopic level. So I would make an inventory of all those things and literally check one by one. I wouldn't let anything go fall through the cracks. And then my staff, my brain coaches, would work with this person to teach them about what to eat, like what kind of Mediterranean diet they should eat, and then encourage them to exercise a little bit more and, you know, give them some brain training, help them to memorize 20 words and then 40 words and then eventually 100 words. So the combination of these, me taking care of the medical problems and sort of reducing the negative factors in their brain, and my staff working on the five pillars of brain health combined produced remarkable results. 84% of our 129 patients, who were mostly in their 70s, had significant improvement in their cognitive functions with standardized, validated cognitive tests. It wasn't that just felt better, everybody felt better, but 84% had objective improvements. And, you know, for example, the person I told you would come in and said, I can't remember anything. I said, and we showed them how to memorize 100 words. They would go home and impress their grandchildren that they have memorized 100 words. So in other words, if you take care of all the factors that affect your brain in a comprehensive way, you can see results in as little as 12 weeks. The other thing we did in this patient population is that we did MRIs at the beginning and after 12 weeks. And we saw that the size of the hippocampus, the part of the brain for memory, which is roughly the size of your thumb, increased by 1 to 3% in these older adults. And that's remarkable. Again, I'm not the only person who's done that. I did it way back in 2016. I was one of the first investigators, neurologists who did this. But since then, there have been dozens of other studies that have shown our brain has a huge degree of malleability and that you can indeed improve your brain function as little as in 12 weeks.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're having a conversation with Dr. Majid Fathouhi. He is a neurologist and adjunct professor at Johns Hopkins. He's redefining how we think about aging, intelligence, and brain health. And his new book that we're speaking about today is called The Invincible Brain, The Clinically Proven Plan to Age-Proof Your Brain and Stay Sharp for Life. Well, before we went on air, Dr. Fathouhi, we were talking about Park City, and you were here this winter skiing. And so you know that probably a lot of us who live in this area have the exercise and the Mediterranean diet thing. We've got that down. But I want to talk about how we exercise our brain. Now, I do my New York Times pips and Wordle every day. I'm learning a foreign language. But you say that not all of these brain games are the same. How do we really get our brains to be rewired?
You can rewire your brain with anything that challenges your brain. And let me just give a little background information. There's an area of the brain called the cortex, which is like a blanket that covers all other brain areas. And then you have the hippocampus, which is the size of your thumb, and it's one on the right and one on the left. Cortex and hippocampus mediate your higher brain functions, your higher cognitive abilities, such as reading, writing, doing your taxes, doing crossword puzzles, you know, making conversation with your friends, and everything else, higher brain functions. Now, this cortex and hippocampus form networks. They have like a mosaic of areas. They form a network. And that network has specific functions such as learning a new language, attention, executive function, and so forth. Now, whichever network you use gets a little stronger. So for example, when you're practicing a new language, you're boosting that network of brain areas that are important for learning a language. You would not, for example, improve the brain areas for navigation because you're using specific cognitive functions. There are 30 different intelligence, 30 different forms of intelligence at least, and there are so many different cognitive functions. Now, it turns out the areas of the brain that you use get stronger. Just like if you go to the gym and you work on your biceps, triceps, cores, or quads, those particular areas you work on get stronger. And same applies to your brain. So if you want to have better memory, I suggest you do brain games that are important, that challenge your memory. For example, you can do brain games that help you get better at memorizing names or other forms. If you want to be a little faster in processing information, then you could do brain games that help you become a little faster. I particularly like dancing. I take dance lessons. I, you know, go dancing with my wife because I know it cross-trains multiple parts of the brain. It helps me to remembering things and sort of it pushes my memory network because I need to remember all the steps I'm supposed to do. It helps with my network for balance and posture because I have to hold my posture in a certain way. At the same time, I need to listen to music and incorporate music into my movements, which is actually pretty challenging in of itself. So I need to do all of those things at the same time. So that's my favorite brain game because it's fun and I get cross-training of many brain areas. The important thing is this. Practice makes cortex. Whichever parts of the brain you use gets stronger. A study was just published earlier this last week that showed that people who learn how to identify birds and go bird watching increase the network of connections that are important for that particular task. So they had a group of novice bird watchers and a group of bird watchers who've been doing it for a while. And when they looked at their brains, they saw parts of the brain that are important for recognizing things that are uncommon and identifying colors and patterns were stronger in the experienced bird watching group versus the novice. Similar studies have been done in taxi drivers in London. They found that those who were driving for 30 years or more, I mean, for a long time, had a proper hippocampus that was important for navigation, be larger in them compared to the novice cab drivers. In other words, whichever part of your brain you use, it gets stronger. So it's not like, a lot of people make the mistakes. Oh, I did crossword puzzles, I still have memory problems and such develop Alzheimer's disease. You need to keep in mind that learning and memory is one of five pillars of brain health. So if you're smoking, you never exercise, you never leave your home, and all you do is sit home and do brain games, obviously you will go on to develop Alzheimer's disease because those things that you are not taking care of are much stronger factors for shrinking your brain. And if you just do one thing, don't expect to do crossword puzzles and then suddenly you don't get Alzheimer's disease. That's the reason for controversy where some people say brain games work and some people say brain games don't work. But brain games, of course they work. Of course they work. That's a no-brainer. Okay? It's like you go to the gym, you work on your biceps will get stronger. It's not maybe they get stronger, they will.
Yeah.
And just people make the mistake of thinking like if something did not prevent Alzheimer's disease, it was not working.
Exactly. So it's the full scope of things. This is going to be really important for my mom to hear because she spends all day long in the wintertime doing jigsaw puzzles because she says, oh, it's good for my brain. But she doesn't get outside and walk around. So
walking has been shown to reduce the footprints of Alzheimer's disease. People who walk 3,000 to 5,000 steps a day have lower levels of these markers of Alzheimer's disease, which we call amyloid and tau. And especially tau, which is a stronger biomarker for Alzheimer's disease, is lower in people who just walk. It's not marathon, it's not jogging. It's just people who walk 3,000 to 5,000 steps a day.
It's kind of hard, other than just noticing, to know how our brain is really doing. And my husband's family has a lot of Alzheimer's in it. And I know he's really concerned about what this might mean for him as he ages. Are there any tests or ways to evaluate where you are in your brain health without, you know, going under massive invasive procedures?
Yes, you could do cognitive tests. These tests check your ability to do simple mathematics or remember things and do puzzles. And they tell you where you stand in terms of memory, attention, executive function compared to other people your age. And so, for example, a person may have a score for memory on 30th percentile, which means 70% of people their age are better than they are. And then the same person may have a processing speed ability that's 99% compared to other people. So this way, you can identify which cognitive domain is the problem. And then you can work on that cognitive domain, just we were talking earlier, to boost it. So if you find that the memory part is not as good, then you can do memory training and work and improve your score for memory. But you may have difficulty with, let's say, executive function, which is problem solving and, you know, sequencing things. And you work on that area and that would get better. Another option, which I don't recommend, is to do blood tests and check for biomarkers of Alzheimer's disease. A revolution in neurology has happened in the past 2 or 3 years where biomarkers have become available to check for levels of amyloid and tau in the brain. These biomarkers are available, but there are no guidelines of what to do with them. I know for a fact that many lifestyle interventions, such as diet and exercise, can reduce the levels of these markers in the brain. And there are some randomized controlled trials that have shown just that. But it's not the same thing as somebody who, for example, has a heart attack and there's a special protocol of what to do with them afterwards to reduce the risk of a second heart attack. We're not there yet. And unfortunately, if somebody has a blood test for Alzheimer's disease and has high levels of amyloid or tau, we don't really have treatment for them. That's a standard. I know that lifestyle interventions are good. We need randomized controlled trials and, you know, recommendations with American Academy of Neurology. There are some drugs that help to reduce amyloid level in people who already have symptoms. But we don't know if those drugs would help people who don't have symptoms and they just have a family history. And even people who have symptoms and take these drugs have very minimal benefits because the late life cognitive decline is due to a soup of problems that include not only amyloid and tau, but things like small strokes, inflammation, reduced blood flow, high cortisol associated with stress, insomnia, sleep apnea, all those things. If you have high amyloid and tau, you'll be in a situation where you know that you're likely to get Alzheimer's disease 10, 20 years later, or maybe sooner, but there's no drug for it or no protocol for it yet. For that reason, I just don't order it and I don't recommend it and I wouldn't take it. But I know some people like my wife who said, no, I want to know. Even if I don't know anything about what to do with it, I want to know anyway. So if you want to know, unfortunately, is blood tests are available without a prescription on the internet, which I think is cruel because, you know, if you do this blood test or get the results and you see that you have Alzheimer's, what are you going to do? Like, you know, a lot of people freak out. Not everybody is educated, knows how lifestyle factors can play a role and what to do with them. So, and then there are some quiz, some questionnaires that can help you identify where you stand compared to other people. I have developed one of those things that I call a brain fitness calculator. It's free and it's available on my website, drfitui.com. So those questionnaires identify whether or not you have significant reported symptoms. It's not objective, it relies on you. And so it's not the same level of accuracy as an objective test. Like a cognitive test is an objective test and a blood test is an objective test. There are also MRIs and PET scans that can help you identify changes in your brain. But the one thing I recommend is if you have symptoms, do something about it. You know, if you feel your memory is not good, focus on the 5 pillars of brain health and just go for it. You also need to talk with a primary care doctor or someone who's experienced in this and make sure that you don't have treatable things such as sleep apnea. Some people are not necessarily overweight. They just snore and they have sleep apnea. And make sure you don't have vitamin B12 deficiency, vitamin D deficiency, thyroid, mild depression. All of those can cause memory problems. Again, a mistake that people make is this. Alzheimer's run in my family. I forget names. Therefore, I must be in the early stages of Alzheimer's disease. That's a total disaster because, first of all, forgetting names is common and it doesn't mean you have any diseases, period. Secondly, if you have family members with late onset Alzheimer's disease, if you have family members who started to have symptoms in their 80s and 90s, that really is not a significant risk factor. It's equivalent of having sleep apnea. Having a parent who developed Alzheimer's disease in a late life is as bad as having had chronic stress or insomnia or sleep apnea, things that, you know, in that level, 2% increase, 3% increase, not 50-50. My book is written for people who have concerns about Alzheimer's disease and want to be proactive. And there are, again, thousands of studies over the past 30 years that have shown so many factors can improve your brain functions. So many factors can literally shrink your brain. And if you're smart about this, you will figure out what are the issues for you and how you can improve those things. I've also developed a free online course and a free app for people who are interested in these things that they can use to find out where they are and improve their brain functions.
So much information here. The book is The Invincible Brain, and our guest has been neurologist Dr. Majid Fathouhi. Dr. Fathouhi, thank you so much for joining us on The Mountain Life. I know our listeners are going to, well, we all crave this information, don't we? Thank you.
My pleasure, and I hope I can make it again to Park City and go skiing again.
That was Dr. Majid Fathouhi.